I think barbers that are self-employed are more driven, if I'm honest. Just work as hard as you can and you'll be rewarded for it yourself.
I say be wary of the hours, set some boundary standards from the start because it gets easier.
And then one of the things, again, that's going to come out from the Labour government, what they're going to do for a worker that's low paid on low sort of hours, they're going to look at a 12-week reference period, average out what hours you've done over those 12 weeks, and then you'd have to provide guaranteed hours for the next block of 12 weeks, which is frightening, isn't it, really?
What would be a red flag for someone recently going self-employed?
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode.
We are here at Barber Connect on the Modern Barber stage, the business stage, and we are talking about freelance, about self-employed, about employed versus self-employed. Definitely one of the kind of queries that comes up with us on the podcast consistently. We see our industry has over 80% self-employed workforce, but I still have lots of conversations about people, about their tax situation, about the legality of it. And I think with the way the wind blowing, everyone is starting to believe that the Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs are going to put a little bit more scrutiny on the freelance sector. So I'm here today joined by Samuel Bartoletti, who is a freelancer. Carl Foster, founder of Mr. Barber, 15 stores, all self-employed workforce. And Andy Boyd from Irwin Mitchell, legal firm, an employment lawyer. So thank you very much for coming and spending a couple of hours surrounded by barbers. Appreciate it. I wanted to really talk about kind of why. Why have you gone down the self-employed route? What are the pros? What are the cons against? What? Why, I guess, is my start point. Carl, in 15 stores, you're doing it right.
Well, yeah, we seem to be doing it right. I mean, for me, basically, I've always been self-employed since I left school. The barbershop I worked in, they were self-employed. I went self-employed. From that, I then opened my first store when I was 21, so it's 30 years old this year. And then we're just a platform now for barbers to ply their trade. So, you know, rather than people work out of their garage or, you know, which we've found as well in COVID, let's be honest, everybody works out of their blooming garage or their back bedroom or whatever. We just give a platform for barbers to be able to ply their trade. They're self-employed. You know, it's one of those things, self-employed, do what I want. Yeah, you can. But we work with barbers. Again, it's one of those, I think barbers that are self-employed are more driven, if I'm honest. And I was even having a conversation this morning with somebody who's nodding at the back there. You know, I think if she was employed, she wouldn't be as driven as she is. And she's out there all over the place, you know, and working really hard as a self-employed barber because she knows the harder she works, the more money she'll earn. Sure. You know, so, I mean, that for me is, you know, the basics of it. And I suppose the massive plus is, you know, just work as hard as you can and you'll be rewarded for it yourself. That's the key, really.
Excellent. And Sam, why the freelance route for yourself?
I think I don't regret any time being employed because I think it created and shaped who I wanted to be as a singular or as a brand moving forward. And I think being self-employed has allowed me to have that flexibility, let's say, of creating and setting my vision, doing my hours, my prices, my services the way I always envisioned them to be. So I think self-employed is kind of giving me that opportunity and, of course, making more money, managing more money as well.
Excellent. Thank you. And Andy, why have we invited you here? What's your take on our industry?
Well, hopefully to provide some clarity on what is quite a complex area. So in terms of everyone wants to know, am I employed or self-employed? Well, there's actually two tests. There's a tax test and there's an employment status test. And that's where it's really difficult. So hopefully that'll come out in the conversation. But it's much more simple, I think, to decide from a tax position whether you're employed or self-employed. But then you move to employment and you're potentially, you're freelance and genuinely self-employed. You might be in that sort of freelance worker, or you might be a genuine employee. So actually, there'll be a lot of indicators, which obviously you guys will be trying to make sure that you're ticking all those boxes to ensure that your staff or you working as a genuine self-employed person. As you've raised, the VAT man is probably the biggest concern for everyone in that situation.
Sure. So what I didn't mention in the beginning, Charlotte here is having a little rest. Oh, thank you very much, Charlotte, is our questionnaire. So she comes, if you want to ask a question, and I'm really hoping there's some questions out there, wave your hand at Charlotte and she will come and give you a mic. So we look forward for some questions, or you're just going to end up with just mine. So you've kind of covered a little bit, Carl, that you feel that people work harder. How do you control it? I mean, is there any control over a working day at Mr. Barber?
No, they can come in, they can do the hours they want to do. I mean, basically, you know, it's one of those things, and it's... they're self-employed, but they're still a team. Because at the end of the day, you spend as much time at work as you do at home. So why would you want to work? There's this thing where people say, oh, you know, self-employed, do what I want. But if you're an idiot, we don't want you in our shop, because you're only going to upset everyone else, and everyone else is going to leave, and we don't have any chair rent coming in. We haven't got business. Yeah. So we try to create a space that people are happy with. They can have time off, days off. But
and how do you cover kind of like the marketing and advertising website of the opening hours of the store, or is that all just done by their own booking systems?
Yeah, it's all done by their own booking systems. They run their own column.
So whoever gets
so they use our booking system, but they run their own problem. So
you know, whoever got the first earliest haircut in is the one that opens up, and the last one finishing.
They run their own column. Yeah. So if they want to have the morning off, they have the morning off and block it out.
Cool.
So it's simple. You know, if they want to have a 3-hour lunch,
generally 3-hour lunch. You find it's the more driven ones that are attracted to Barber.
Yeah, yeah.
That do more and more rather than less and less.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it just, you know, you can see the busy ones. You know, the ones that take more money every week are the ones who are not closing their column, and working. And the amount of them that want to do after hours as well, fine. It's not a problem.
And Sam, do you find that actually it gives you that freedom to balance your time, or do you find actually you work harder than you ever did just to make some money?
Yeah, and I think that's the tricky one, because especially when you start, you're like, I need to work the extra hour, make the extra effort to, of course, build our client base, but also to make more money. So I think it's fitting everyone in, everyone last minute, open 7 days a week. I think like you do that at the start, but then eventually, I'm 2 years in, it kind of hits you, like you want to kind of create that balance. So I think that's the tricky part, like setting hours. And because, of course, you got everyone used to the fact that you're always available any time of the day, any time of the week. So it kind of gets tricky to then create that balance, stick to your hours, especially as you get successful.
Sure. So let's open this up. You've kind of, is anyone here freelance? Can't join in, give us a hand. Who's freelance? There we go. Ah, thank you.
Hello, everyone.
Hiya.
So, I just opened my barbershop now, 1 week ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you. And I'm looking for the barbers now. I don't know what should I do, to rent chairs, to be self-employed, or to do, I don't know, you know, commissions, or should I just pay them, like, employed,
so
what should I do?
What is the difference between chair rental, percentage, commission, and self-employed? Is there a distinction between these sectors?
It's probably for the man at the other end of the sofa, really. But I suppose we were set chair rent always for 20 odd years until COVID hit. And because of lockdown, open up, we, you know, it was just so confusing to start with about, well, you work those days, so you owe that much chair rent or whatever. So we converted it over to percentage. And it's just been, you know, the barbers are happier with it. They know where they are. If they're not in, they don't pay. You know, it's just very simple, you know, whereas if you've got a contract with them that they're renting a chair 5 days a week, they've got to pay that 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Or is it on percentage? You know, I don't actually know sometimes whether somebody's on holiday or whatever. It's not till I see their Instagram and I'm like, oh, okay, you're on holiday. You know, so I don't know. I don't check. You know, I'm not on it all the time. As long as, you know, those guys in the shop kind of work as a team, you know, it's... I just think the percentage way is, you know, the more everyone does, the more everyone earns.
Yeah.
It's a very, very simple
model. Was there
model.
A big change in the contract aspect of chair rental to commissions and percentage?
Yeah, there's a change of the wording, basically, isn't there? You know, but it's
and
Sam, very similar.
How does your freelance work?
So I moved from London to Stratford-upon-Avon initially with a brand, but realized it was the moment for me to go freelance. So I basically rent a space with four chairs in there. So I'm thinking, and going back to the question, I'm thinking of next steps, next stages for me. And I think for me, it's important that creating like a team environment, of course, being many shops. So yeah, that's where I'm
at.
Okay. So Anthony and I had a discussion about this before the event, and obviously one of the things you were saying was about control. If you want people in sort of 9 till 5, if you get them as an employee, as you just said, Carl, you don't know when they're taking holiday, but obviously then you have to pay them holiday. So I think for someone setting up, it depends what you want. So you want the greater control, you want the great personal service, you want to give them work, they have to do work. Those are all what we refer to as indicators of employment status. So if you want greater control, you want to maybe put restrictions on them setting up in business against you, you've got all those things. Whereas I guess, Carl, you've always probably taken the risk that those people can go and set up two doors down the street. You've known that. But obviously that was something that we talked about. So I think that those, the more indicators you've got of employed status, unfortunately, then that's met with all the greater benefits. So they're going to have protection from unfair dismissal. You're going to be paying them holiday pay. You're going to be paying them statutory sick pay. So that full suite of benefits, that passes on to you as the employer. But with that, you get much greater control. One of the things that's really pivotal, I think, for owners at the moment is employers' NI's gone up, hasn't it? So immediately then you're having to pass that on to the customers. Yeah. So for someone setting out, you might want to be thinking, what is it that I want from it? If it's control over the employees, then you want an employed model. If you think I want lower risk financially, then you're probably going to look at it self-employed.
Cool. And I think it's also about looking at your numbers of does that, you know, how much your chair rental, how much of a percentage is going to work for you to cover your overhead, because there's still, you know, it comes down to it as a business owner, you've still got to pay the bills. And you need to know if your rent's too high. Some business models just won't sustain a chair rental because the chair rental will be too expensive for that area. So there is a game to play. I mean, we spoke, my team are all employed. And a lot of that is down to the control that my company has the clients. The clients come to my company. We use our database. We communicate with our database. When the staff leave, they have a non-compete. There's contracts that say they can't open up down the road. They can't take staff with them. They can't contact any of my clients. They can't have any of my name on their Instagram. So there's an absolute severing when we employ. From your point of view, your business doesn't have any clients. Your clients are your barbers. And that's I guess, the distinction.
And so what I want to throw probably out into the room is the Employment Rights Bill is obviously the biggest thing that's been on the horizon for us as employment solicitors. And the day one right's going to come in for unfair dismissal. So I don't want to go into too much of a deep dive, but at the moment, if you have an employee for up to 2 years, you can dismiss them and just pay them their notice pay within that first 2 years. With the Labour government, what they want to bring is that's going to become a day one right. So you're going to take someone on, they might just be the wrong fit. Okay, what they have said is they're going to have a 9-month probationary period with a dismissal light process. We don't know what that looks like yet, but obviously that's something you need to consider. If you're going to take someone on that immediately might bring an unfair dismissal claim, then you're looking at defending employment tribunal claims. And the thing that you're not going to want to hear from me is that even if you're winning the employment tribunal, you won't recover your costs. So it's always a very costly exercise to go through, which then goes back to recruitment. So you need to be checking your references. You need to be making sure that recruitment process is right. Just advertising and hoping someone's going to fill that space, if you're going to go on that employed model, it is going to be even harder, I think, when it comes. Whereas if you're on the self-employed model, they're not at the right fit. They cut them the next day, aren't you? So you do have that flexibility. But yeah, the Employment Rights Bill, what's coming with that day one unfair dismissal right is a massive thing that employers need to be considering.
Cool. Thank you.
Charlotte, have we got another question? We're back to mine, are we? So while you've got the mic, actually, what would you say are the kind of must-haves as a company you would must-have to put in your contract as a freelancer? And like for Sam, how you make sure you're protected inside that contract?
So I suppose the arse-covering thing we always say is what's written in a contract is actually what's reflected by what happens between the parties. So you can write whatever you want in that contract, but actually, unless you're walking the walk, it's not going to matter. But you'd be wanting to tick off as many indicators that you can that someone is genuinely self-employed. So if you give them work and they can just say, no, I don't want to do it. So that's what we call mutuality of obligation. Typical lawyer speak, overcomplicated for what it is, but basically, I give you work, can you do the work or can you refuse it? If you can genuinely refuse that work, then you're ticking that box. Personal service. So if you're an employee, you want that employee to do that work. If you're a contractor, you could subcontract that work. I don't know really how that works in barbering, but you might say, well, I can't do it, but so-and-so can do that for you under the contracted model. Use of equipment. So they would have to use their own equipment. You've already touched a lot of these about your own pricing. And then that sort of flexibility about, you know, taking holiday when you want to think. So as many of those indicators as we can tick in the contractual documentation, that's how we would try and cover off that someone is genuinely self-employed.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Bringing it back to you guys, I think the other thing that I hear a lot is how should a freelancer set their rates, or how do you decide on what's fair? I mean, I speak to a lot of barbershop owners who's like, look, they were doing a 50-50 split, or they were paying me £100 a day or whatever it was, and somewhere up the road chipped it a little bit more, and they're like, I just couldn't afford to compete. How do you stay confident that that's our rate, that's how we work, and that's what will keep people busy? What are we talking about? Yeah.
Well, I speak for me personally. I always prefer having a fixed monthly rate instead. So I've agreed, since I went self-employed, I've agreed a rental for the space. And I know for me, that's kind of always worked perfectly. So regardless if I'm there or the 1 day or 7 days a week, that's the amount I pay overall for the monthly. And then that kind of has always worked for me.
And you can walk away at any point from that. Your space is a month-to-month agreement.
So it isn't. I've got three. I always do 12 months contract with a 3 months notice, which works perfectly for me. Yeah.
Cool. And Carl, how? I mean, obviously you've just switched from a chair rental to the commission base. But as a freelancer, what do you think's fair? What's the split? How do you make it work?
Well, we probably, I know there's a lot of barbershops out there that do 50-50, but we don't. We do 60% to the barber. So, you know, we probably earn less per shop than most barbershops do, but we'd rather have happy barbers. You know, it's an old saying of mine, and the guys in the back row will be laughing at it. Happy barbers and happy customers equals a happy barbershop. Yeah. So if everybody in there is enjoying working there, enjoying what they're doing, they're earning good money, you know, it just, you know, I can't be in all the shops all the time.
No, of course,
I'd rather just have everybody just being happy and earning good money. And then, It's just it's easier. So we did the spreadsheets, looked at it in COVID. You know, obviously the shops were all locked down, so we spent time, looking at what was pretty much going to be the same as chair rent over a year, and that's pretty much there,
And from their point of view, are they taking the money and paying you 40%, or do you take the money and pay them 60%?
No, it goes into like an escrow account, and then their money goes to them end of every week.
Cool.
I'm presuming
out of 15 shops, you're VAT registered on your 40% of that?
Well, it depends, because all shops, because they're all separately owned by different barbers as well, because they're franchised as well, so they are all separate entities. So because they're all separate entities, it depends. We've just got, funnily enough, I'm sitting in the back watching you on the last one, and I've got my bookkeeper on the message saying I'm registering this one for VAT because it's just gone over the threshold. So it just depends on individual shop. So, if they go over the VAT threshold, you register for VAT, that's it.
We have a question. Thank you, Charlotte. Hi.
Just with yourself saying that you went from doing rent-a-chair, was it, to employment?
Rent-a-chair to percentage, commission.
Okay.
Yeah, so still all self-employed.
So myself, I went from being employed to recently being self-employed. What advice would any of you give to new barbers to look out for, warning signs for people that when you are employed, but it doesn't work out, for example? Where I last was, it was good at the beginning, but then the person who employed me, whose shop it was, wouldn't work as much. So it was just me on the shop floor. So obviously I was bringing in all the money enough for him not to work, but to fund the shop, which then was when I asked to then rent a chair. And then obviously because he knew the figures that I was bringing in when he wasn't there, the rent that he asked was say 2,400 a month. So is there anything that from your business perspective and years in experience, you would say for younger barbers to look out for when things like that start to happen? Or when people just get a bit too comfy, etc.
Oh, what's a red flag? That would be quite interesting across the sofa. What would be a red flag for for someone recently going self-employed?
Well, it's funny. We were talking a minute ago about, barbers being able to just go out and set up on their own down the road. We've had that very recently happen. One of our barbers went and set up down the road and took two of the other barbers with him because they're all pals.
Yeah.
And they've gone around the corner and they're renting a chair around there, whereas we're on commission. And now all of a sudden this guy's gone, the electric's a bit more expensive than I thought it was, so now you've got to pay a bit more. And it's stepping up all the time, and he constantly keeps stepping it up. And I'm talking to one of the guys at the moment about coming back because, you can't just keep doing that. It doesn't matter what business you're in, you can't just keep moving the goalposts. If you've got a rent, it's agreed for a certain amount of time. If they're going to keep putting it up, you're going to walk. And if you're driven and you're self-employed, and everything matters to what you put in your pocket, you've got to look after yourself at the end of the day. So, that's the way it is. That he's going to lose you if he's not keeping you happy.
Sam, any red flags that you've encountered when you moved to self-employed?
No, I think I was lucky enough because rather than going to the chair rental, I decided to kind of take over the whole space. So I knew I kind of had the space under control. So the development of the team or anything that would come after would be kind of under my control. So at the moment, it's just myself.
But you're planning to have more self-employed people working with you in your space?
I think for me, I always envisioned, because I wanted to create that brand and that vision. For me, ideally, I'd like to find employed or partially find an in-between, a basic salary with commission. So you kind of still have that control. I like to offer a more luxury experience, luxury grooming. I was in Mayfair for 6 years, so I'm kind of trying to bring that experience where I am currently.
So people working with you will be employed?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you'd need to be looking at the contract itself. I've probably hit the nail on the head on it for being the employment guy, but what's in that actual agreement? What have you signed up for? If you wanted to get out of it, what are the penalties for doing that. So if there are things that are actual penalty clauses, are they legally binding on you? What's the length of the notice provision? Obviously, I think it was 3 months for Sam here. So obviously, I think you want to be looking at those things ahead of time. But I think from what you were saying, the red flags for you were you were working so hard on an employed basis that you thought, well, if I go to chair rental, I can do that. But then I suppose what's got against you is then what the charge of the rent's been. So maybe if you'd had your time again, you'd have probably tried to wager what that would be before making the jump, I suppose.
Excellent. Thank you. Charlotte, thank you. Hiya.
Hello. Carl, question for you. We said you've got like 15 sites and some are franchised and some are not. Do you have a software that kind of does all of the franchises, or do they all, can they use whatever they want in each franchise?
Yeah, like what? On the, what payments
system,
or...
Payments, everything.
Yeah, booking I mean, we obviously, as a franchise, we pay for the booking system. You know, that's part of what they get for... But they, yeah, I mean, they can use their own, you know, if they choose a different card terminal, it's not really a problem.
So they can take their own payments, and how then do you track everything?
We'd have to be able to see it, obviously, because then they're on a percentage for the franchise. So we just have to have vision of it, that's all.
Fair play.
The other one that I seem to get is about systems. As an employer, my whole company runs on having systems. This is what happens, and that's how the company works. And we can see where we need people and we can slot those in to cover those systems and that work. When you have a group of self-employed, can you, it's still a business, you still need systems, don't you?
Oh my God.
Well, you don't just have a building that people come and go. There must
well
be
no, because like I said earlier, we touched on earlier, you know, if you have some, you know, as we were talking about a second ago, you know, with this Labour changing the thing that, you now employ a guy and then it's really difficult to get hold of him.
Yeah.
Whereas self-employed, you know, you take somebody on and believe me, I've interviewed and met enough barbers in 30 plus years. So, you know, they come in, they tell you everything you want to know. They're like, oh, absolute breath of fresh air. This guy or this girl's going to be amazing. Absolutely brilliant. The first day they turn up, they're an idiot. You know, they upset everyone else on the shop floor. You know, at least when they're self-employed, you can just go, well, sorry, it's not going to work out. You know, so again, we try and build a team. So there's no systems is a, you know, great thing in business. And if you're going to build a brand, generally, you've got to have systems. With us, the system is the fact that we just like to build a bit of a team. Everybody just has to kind of work together. You know, but there's no set, you know, we still offer a bit of, actually this week our kind of education facility is being finished, being done up. So again, we will be able to offer education to our barbers, but because they're self-employed, they'll have to pay.
They'll charge and it's voluntary.
But also our barbers will be giving the education as well, so they'll be able to earn their own money on the side doing that. So, you know, so within the brand, that's well. So I've always said we're a platform for people to come in and be self-employed properly and do what they want to do. But you know, there's also, you know, opportunities for people to be on stage and do hosting and stuff like that, isn't there, Orbs? You know, so you know, we give opportunities as a brand to other people to, you know, to follow.
Cool. Oh, I've always been quite fascinated by that myself. So, as we started off with, there's a great rumour that HMRC are going to come look. You know, they did the building industry 5 years ago or so and went through that viciously. And it looks like that seems like we're next. If you feel if you're showing yourself employed, but you feel like you're employed, what would be the markers that would kind of go, you know what, I'm actually being treated like an employer, like an employee? And what should you do with that if you find yourself in that situation? Should we get to...
So the starting point is probably the CESS tool. I think it's been recently updated actually for the sort of barber and hairdressing industry. So that's the check employment status tool. So it'll just ask you obviously a series of questions it will determine the tax status, but again, it's not going to determine the employment status. So it's going to be very persuasive, but it's still going to be what's actually happening in practice. So I think as I've gone through, it's all those indicators. So are you providing a personal service? Is there mutuality of obligation? Are you using your own equipment? Are you in control of your own pricing? So it's all those things, a level of control. Then just looking at that global matrix of all those factors put together. So if you are concerned, go and get advice. But I think obviously listening to sort of the two models, I think yours is very employed, yours is very self-employed. It's that bit in between, which is the way you're sort of labelled as a worker, and you will get some of the benefits. So you'll get the right to national minimum wage. You'd be able to bring discrimination claims, for example. You'd be entitled to holiday pay. So my experience is, everyone's happy being self-employed until something goes wrong. And then they'll start saying, well, actually, I was a worker. And then one of the things, again, that's going to come out from the Labour government, which we've not touched on, is they're going to go through this guaranteed hours. And stick with me. What they're going to do for a worker that's low paid on low sort of hours is they're going to look at a 12-week reference period. So you'd work for 12 weeks, average out what hours you've done over those 12 weeks, and then you'd have to provide guaranteed hours for the next block of 12 weeks, which is frightening, isn't it, really? And then, I guess in your industry as well, seasonal fluctuations, the run-up to Christmas, for example, I imagine is really busy in your industry. So if that comes in and you're not in that self-employed employed model, you're in that murky area in the middle, and you've then got to start guaranteeing hours, there's going to be a threshold which we don't know yet. But again, I think that would really cement the positions of you really want to be employed or you really want to be self-employed. If you're sort of dabbling in that bit in the middle as a worker with some of your the people you've taken on, if you're going to have to guarantee them hours, guarantee them pay, and they're not even going to have people coming through the door, I think that's going to be something that you need to sit up and really take focus on with that coming through from the Labour government.
And I mean, this will be the markers that if, God forbid, none of us want that in any way, shape or form, that you get an inspection. This is the checklist that the revenue would be looking at you.
Yeah, so all the things I've just been through there's, I suppose it's that spectrum, isn't it? So all the indicators, you go through all them, the more indicators you get, the more benefits you're going to be having to give the employee. So all those ones that I just touched upon. So have a look at what's actually happening in practice. If you are trying to put notice periods on people, if you are trying to put restrictions on people, if you're saying you must work between these hours, if you're dictating pricing to them, if you're saying they must use certain brands, they must follow pricing, they must use certain equipment, they must wear certain clothing. If you're on that end of the spectrum, then you need to be really considering how you're operating your business. If you're at the other end and people have got complete autonomy, and they're actually in control, they can take holiday, they can turn down work, then you're in a much more comfortable position. So I think it's working through all those indicators, do it on a sort of spectrum basis and see where it sort of it falls. There's not going to be black and white, unfortunately. It's having to look at everything in the whole.
Excellent. So if I can run down the line, what would be the one piece of advice that you would give to someone going freelance? So if they're starting now or they're thinking about it for next month, or
work really hard. Simple. And it's funny, even sitting here listening to just now, that you know the guys who are on stage who are excellent at social media and all that kind of stuff, I'm a dinosaur when it comes to that. You know, I don't do social media, but I watch all of our guys that do social media. And it's great. They do their own stuff. They have their own accounts. You know, we can share it on our accounts or whatever. It's brilliant. But at the end of the day, I think it comes down to, for me personally, the busiest barbers that I see within our brand are the people who just work. Mm. And they don't have time to post. We were talking about it earlier, and I think the busiest barbers are the ones that post the least.
Yeah.
Because they're just working. And word of mouth in your town is worth more than the Insta, as far as I'm concerned. So it's just work hard. Do your job properly and crack on.
Sam?
I'd say just go for it. Work hard. I say be wary of the hours. Set some boundary standards from the start, because it gets easier as you move on in the years and get busier. I say be wary of the money management, and put systems from the start that will help you in the future or when the tax bill comes in or when you have to do your numbers. I do a percentage split as the money come in. I don't know if it helps anyone. I do like a 25% on site for tax, 10% for self or business development. And then I'd say the rest can be my salary, you know. Sure. So I think that could be a good way to do it from the start.
My role is always to advise on risk, unfortunately. So I would be looking at what's in your current contract. What's the length of your notice period? Do you have any post-termination restrictions? So as Anthony was saying, he's probably got that protection in his contracts, whereas Carl's not got that. So if you've got a non-compete says you can't work, I don't know, within, and it's usually a very small radius of the current salon, but these restrictions have, in this industry, actually been enforceable. So is it 3 months, 6 months? Can you swallow that for 3 to 6 months? You've got your customers and your clients. If you're not going to be able to take them with you for 3 to 6 months, where are you going to find the new work? If you've been on a very good salary, been very highly paid, again, can you deal with that fluctuation of, I don't know, you leave a part of the year and it's a quiet time, people go on holiday, I don't know, and that money's not coming in. Can you afford that? And then I think, as we touched on earlier, what does that new agreement look like? If you're doing the commission-based or rental agreement, you know, have you done your due diligence on that? But really, I think before you leave, before you jump, you need to be looking at the contract you're leaving behind and the contract you're moving on to.
Lovely. And I think as a last question, there's a lot of young people coming into the industry. I'm sure you've interviewed quite a lot of them that have done a 12-week training course. They need to improve their skills and are immediately going into a self-employed model. How do they improve their skill as a self-employed worker? How does that growth in their development after 9 or 12 week course grow?
It's interesting to see then, you know, the young ones come through, because when they've done 9, 12 weeks, most of them are not shop ready.
That's the problem.
They need that help. And I've seen all your podcasts on it, but it's they can come in. They can do reduced price haircuts. You know, the guys, they can watch everyone else in the shop. They can learn from them, do reduced price haircuts until everyone thinks that, oh, okay, you can go on to the next stage or the next stage. You know, we'll do them a bigger percentage for them, because obviously they've got to earn their money to, you know, to keep themselves. So yeah. You know, they might be young, but they might have a car to run or whatever. So, you know, we're not greedy with that. We'd rather they came in to become part of the team eventually. So we've got a way that we work through the percentages with them. So there might be half price haircuts for a little while. But then, you know, the whole part of the whole purpose about Mister was the fact that you can come in and work in a shop with other people. And, you know, as I've seen here on the stages, everybody likes getting together. They like watching other people's,
yeah, wow.
You know, so to do that in a shop. But you see so many of them who go out actually on their own and just set up their own shop after 9, 12 weeks. And, you know, we've all seen them open and close very quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that you can, you know, you can come into a shop and we'll work it out with you to make sure that you're pushing yourself and earning enough money and then get you through so that you are actually shop ready to go self-employed properly.
Excellent. And Sam, was there a point really that you... If you were in that position, is that the way you would go that early in your career?
I'd say I come from Italy, and in Italy is 4 years requirement of school, college, or anything like that to be able to then open a shop or operate under a barber, a hairdresser. So for me, it was a tricky one being here and getting used to the different system. I think practice makes perfect, of course. For me, because the struggle is because I do a more like upper level, like luxury grooming. For me is finding the balance of someone coming in, practicing with mates, family members, and kind of perfectioning, of course, like watching me. And
companies can, you know, it is something that a company, if you are self-employed, you're, you know, 18, 19, just done a course, you can still have a company that delivers you training, unstructured, presumably, that they're still self-employed. That works. And so a company couldn't turn around and go, we can't employ you. We can't self-employ you. We don't do any training. That's...
Yeah, I just don't see what the incentive is, really. Mm. I don't know. What about your model? How do you deliberately give training to people in the employed model? Because obviously saying it might not be happening at Carl's barbershops, but what are you putting in process or in place for your younger people coming through?
So we have an apprentice scheme. So they go through the apprenticeship, they get their qualifications, they're trained 90% by us and maybe 7.5% by the college, and they get their paperwork. And then we have a period of an improver. So they'll spend a year with us improving their skills with 4 assessments during that year to see if their base salary, all my staff are base salaried, so they would get their base salary would improve quarter on quarter as long as they tick their skills. And if they don't improve their skills, they don't grow. But yeah, but ours is very structured. There's a start point and an end point. You start here knowing nothing, you end up here with a job, and this would be the salary you'd earn at that job.
Yeah, I think just sort of going back to that, on the way we do it, you know, you get these young kids come in and, you know, yeah, I can cut hair, I can do it. But you can't. But you can learn if you want to. And then these guys in the shop, more than happy to give you a bit of time because they're nice people. So, you know, you can do that. And if you want to become part of the team, that's great. But the amount of them who then, you know, one I just had to have a word with recently, I said to him, it's up to you. It doesn't matter to me. But if you're only going to do 2 days a week or two sets of 6 hours a week, you're not going to learn anything. You know, you've got to put yourself out there to learn. So, but it's up to them. Yeah. You know, that's the thing. The more they do, and then you get the ones who come in and they literally won't go home because they just want to learn. And they're the ones that fly.
Yeah, I mean, we most of ours have been apprentices from scratch. We've got one guy who's about to join us, who's done some training. He's 29. He's looking as a second career. And so he will be employed, but part of his contract will be if he leaves us within 1 year, he owes us the value of that training. So we felt a year was fair enough. Hopefully after the year, not only would he be skilled, he'd be part of the company, he'd be being successful and wouldn't want to leave. And I think legally a year is fairly enforceable. And if he does leave, his salary going forward would be garnished to pay us back. Because as an employer, the chances are we're trained and then they can wander up the road and start doing that. And we're, you know, our non-compete and those practices are expensive to enforce and difficult. And a very easy one to enforce is we've put this money into you and you've signed an agreement that you will you'll forfeit that free training if you decide to leave during it. That fair? I want to find out I'm wrong now.
No, so yeah, the only way that we draft those contracts is on a sliding scale. So yeah, first 12 months or before you've done the training or during the training, usually they're on the hook for say 100%. And then the longer they stay, then it dilutes down because you're rewarding the loyalty. The only things to be wary of is these very low paid people. You just try and take all that money out of their final salary, you'll be breaching national minimum wage. Yeah.
I think there are legal frameworks, and the important thing, I think certainly for a younger barber, is to make sure that you're not being exploited, I guess, which is the concern with so many people coming into our industry, and there are some gnarly, horrible people out there. Obviously not sitting on our sofa. The Noble Barber Podcast is launching a new product in the next couple of months, so please sign up via our QR code. We need your support. If you enjoy our podcast, please like and subscribe. And if you don't, what are you doing listening to me? If you want us to continue, please subscribe and join our mailing list. It's the only way we're going to manage to stay independent and truthful, I guess. Thank you very much, Andy, for your time. I really appreciate you. I hope you survived this room full of barbers. Sam, good luck. I look forward to having conversations with you once you become an employer.
and the headaches that go with that. And Carl, thank you. We've spoken about this a few times. I'm really pleased we got to talk properly. Thank you very much for being the audience and being here. We've been the Noble Barber Podcast. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.